everybody, and welcome to this week's Good Work Show. Got another good one for you, and yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah, so a few weeks ago, we got to sit down with Greg Cole. He's the executive director of Emmaus House. They're doing some great work.
Yes.
Is that the south side, west side? You know my geography.
Southwest, yes.
Okay,
yeah,
so both.
Over by Georgia State.
Okay, you know my geography.
The Georgia State stadium.
Area. So they're doing some really great work on that side of town, partnering with the Barack and Michelle Obama Academy over there, and just really serving that community, and a community that, a historical community, but a, one that just needs a little bit of extra support. So they are doing, what is it called, location?
It's place-based.
Place-based.
Yes. So place-based, that means that they're actually
in the place.
In the place and part of the fabric of that community. So that's a, it's a model that a lot of nonprofits who do that sort of community-based work are picking up, because it serves the community better when you're part of the community versus coming into the community and
going home.
And, yes.
You know, because you always feel, don't you always feel better if you go someplace and you feel like the people know you?
Yeah, like Cheers.
Yeah. Or like my, so.
I've never been to Cheers.
Well.
It's a real thing. You can go to Cheers.
Thing.
Yeah,
yes,
but I've never been.
I've never been to Boston.
I think I've been to Boston. Actually, I might have been to the airport.
Okay.
That doesn't really count, though.
I feel like you have to pick and choose the time. Like, I feel like there's one day in July that I could go to Boston where there's no risk that it would snow. And then that's it.
It doesn't snow year round, does it?
I don't know. I don't trust places like Boston or like places near the Great Lakes and Chicago. Like, I always feel like
there's no snow. Like, it is, you're in no danger of it snowing
in
the summer.
It is cold in Chicago.
In the summer, no. The summer is hot.
They're hot. It's just not the same kind of hot. At night, it's cold.
I mean, it's not Florida hot, but But it's still hot.
I'm always like shocked when they're like, it's 89 degrees and we have a heat advisory and check in on your loved ones. And
I'm like, who said that on 89?
In Chicago. They're like, it's going to be.
Are you serious on 89?
I think it's like, it's going to be 91 degrees today. And I'm like, what's wrong with you people?
I went for Labor Day one time. It was really, really
nice. See, I was there around the same time one year and we went out to Navy Pier that night. It was like 50 degrees. And I'm like, is this?
You must have went on the off year.
Maybe.
Yeah, it was good at the nighttime when I went. Because I went to Navy Pier, too, and I remember that night. It was fine.
And I remember thinking, I need a sweater. I just feel like there's a good 8 weeks that you can, like, trust that it's going to be warm. And then after that, it's a crapshoot. Like, there's going to be a really late winter. There's going to be an early winter. Like, I just don't trust it. So, I don't.
Well, I will only go there in the summer months. I will tell you that. That is not a thing in the winter.
Like, August is pretty much the cutoff for me. Well, I'm not going pretty much after that because I'm like, nope, you guys are
good. It depends on how many days, though, because people say you could go, but just you have to manage what you're doing. Like, you're not going out on State Street walking down. You're not going.
No, that's a different kind of
cold. You're not doing that.
It's a different kind of. I mean, the thing about it, to me, it's always the wind. It's like I can handle the cold, but when that wind kind of just. Slices.
It's windy downtown
to your
in Atlanta.
Yeah, when you get swirling between those buildings, it is not fun. I think I feel like I was in New York in the winter once.
I was last year,
and
that wasn't not the. It wasn't really great at all.
I do remember now. I was like, yes, I had gone up for a meeting, and then I stayed for a couple extra days. Like, my hotel was right in Herald Square, so I was looking. I looked directly into the Macy's. I was like, well, I'm going to catch a show. I can walk everywhere. I can walk over to the theater. And I was like, this was a miscalculation for the first week in January in New York. It was,
I think that's
Les Mis.
Yeah. I think we went the second week before that conference. And it was, I was like, this is,
Oh, that's right.
I don't want to have to do too much. First of all, when it's that cold, you have to do too much to go outside.
Yes.
Gloves, hat, scarf. Then you get in the cab
you're going and it's
and
hot.
Whatever, and then you got to have all the stuff on, and then it's New York, so you got to have your purse all in your jacket. I can't. It's too much. It's too much.
And you just
can't be free.
And you're outside. It's one thing here when it's cold and you leave your house and you get in your car, and for all the bad things about the fact that we're all in our own cars, like, you can control your own temperature and your own climate.
Yeah.
But if you are, like, trying to go from outside where it's like five, and then you get in the cab and maybe this cab driver turns on their heat, but that cab driver doesn't, or you get in the subway and
it's like you never know
a hot tuna can, or it's just awful.
Yeah.
And then you get inside any building and the heat's pumping. You're like.
But then you got to take all the stuff off.
And then what do you do with it?
And then you have to wear tennis shoes everywhere. But you have to have your other shoes with you. I don't want to have to carry all that stuff.
So
I don't mind wearing tennis shoes everywhere, but if I want to change, then I have to carry the tennis shoes.
So that's
a problem.
I don't disagree with you. So I lived in DC for 5 or 6 years and I took public transportation. Mm-hmm. I took the metro to work every day. So that definitely was a thing. Like, because you will ruin your shoes.
You will.
I think once you become accustomed to that.
That's not a custom.
It's not that big of a deal to me because I'm like, I'd rather have.
But then you got to carry your coat, your scarf, your gloves, your hat, and your shoes. It's like you're carrying a whole other outfit.
You have your whole wardrobe. It's like you have your clothes and then it's like you're a complete outer.
Yes.
Which is why I own so many coats. And you mock me for the number of coats that I own.
But you live in Georgia now.
I know. But still, you get an opportunity to wear coats. After my experience of living there and putting on that same coat every day.
You only had the one coat?
Yeah,
like one winter coat?
I was broke. I didn't have a coat wardrobe. I had a coat that was probably not sufficiently warm, but it would do. I had a coat and a pair of brown boots and a pair of black boots. And I had to make do. But after that, I was like, I will never. Because by the end of the winter, you just want to burn it. You're So at this point, I'm like, now that I have the means to have options, I'm just gonna get a
Black Panther suit. you know, like the Black Panther. Yeah, I feel like that would insulate you from not only people hitting you, obviously, because that was a thing. You can't shoot it, but I feel like if he wore that in the snow, he'd be fine too.
That's the answer.
I feel like
suit.
Yeah, I feel like they should make that.
I'm sure if they could find vibranium, they would. I mean,
all you gotta do is take the necklace off, and then didn't he change it to his regular clothes?
I think so. Yeah. it does make you wonder, where are his clothes?
Under the suit.
But they don't get wrinkled.
I'm telling you, it's the thing.
When people, I saw this funny thing, is like things that happen in movies that don't happen in real life. When people take off a wig on a movie and then their hair just comes cascading down and it's beautiful. But in real life, it's like, isn't your hair like
don't
all
you have
that?
A wig cap?
Yes. So when you take off the Black Panther suit, somehow his perfect, beautiful, wool suit underneath is not wrinkled.
I mean, or any other superhero. I feel like you just have to get a superhero. They will manufacture that.
Wasn't it cold in Infinity War? Was it cold?
I didn't watch that movie.
I didn't see it either, but was it cold? Sure. I felt like it was in the winter.
So the Black Panthers, this is a thing. All we have to do is get some vibranium.
Somebody is texting me like it's really important, but it's not. So we're going to continue.
All we got to do is get vibranium, and that will solve a lot of issues. I could go anywhere with vibranium, with the vibranium suit. Nothing happened to him. I mean, almost, but he didn't have the vibranium on.
That's what I thought. He got stabbed. Was he wearing the suit?
No, he wasn't wearing the suit. That's what I'm saying. You got to have the suit on. The suit is the key.
And don't you have to drink the juice of the flower from the cave? I mean, I think there's
all semantics.
And then you have to fight in the little pool. Like, I think there's
I don't want to be Black Panther. I want to have a suit.
But I think you have to do all that for the suit to work. I don't think the suit just works.
Are you sure?
I know you have to drink the flower water, purple stuff.
I mean, that's fine. I'll drink flower water.
I'm just saying there's other things that you have to do other than just...
I'm not going to fight to the death, though, because I don't want to be the king. I just want to have the suit.
I'd rather be Iron Man, because then you could fly. And there's more space, so your clothes don't get wrinkled.
But somebody can still shoot you down. I mean, nobody was shooting Black Panther. Like, the bullets just ricocheted.
They did. Well, for
I could
the most
go
part,
anywhere.
Well, Iron Man, until he got hit by that truck. That didn't work out well.
I don't know what happened
and
to
he
Iron
had to
Man.
Charge the suit. If the suit...
Oh, if you go down and get out of electricity, you're dead. Where's your charger?
It's like, I need a charger.
My battery is dead on my suit. I'm like, well, bye.
Is there a USB cord for the Iron Man suit? You just plug it in somewhere?
Plug it in your cigarette lighter.
Right. It's like in your car. That'd be hilarious. If there was like the Iron Man suit was just sitting outside the car and there was like a cord running through the window. And you're like, I'll be done in about 30 minutes.
Or you could park close like you recharge your electric vehicle. You have to recharge your suit when you go in somewhere.
At the Walgreens. Up there at the corner. I don't know how we got out of this conversation.
Because I was saying, I just said.
Because it was cold. And New York, I feel like Chicago. A Black Panther suit.
I just feel like
Boston, that's where it started. It started with Boston. We already said who's on the show today. So obviously folks in the room are not listening to know who was on the show because we already said that we're going to be joined by Greg Pohl from Amaya's House. That's who's going to join us today.
So we talked to him a few weeks ago and it'll be good to have to listen to that interview.
Really great. Like we said before, if anybody was not listening the first time, like other people in the room who you can't see back here or here.
I think he was so enthralled about the Black Panther suit. He was looking
for that.
Yeah.
But that's a good reminder. So we talked about Greg at the top, but we can come back in case anybody wandered into the show halfway through and they thought that this was just a Marvel fan show, which it's not. It's the Good Work Show. Welcome.
I wonder how Thor did because he didn't have on that many clothes. That was a good.
Thor didn't need a suit.
No, but which one were when he was fat? What's the one where he was fat?
I don't remember.
I think it was Infinity War. My daughter had it on, and I didn't. She was like, obviously, I only saw the first Avengers, so I haven't seen enough of them. Right. She's like, you have to watch all 28,000 of them. I was like, no, I don't.
You know what? That would be a good thing if you are, if you have to.
Oh, yeah. If you have to be.
Because there's an order. There's 17 of them, and there's an order.
17,000.
I don't think there's 17,000.
It sounds like it.
It feels like it.
It's 17,000 hours.
Yes.
It's a lot of content.
All of those movies are like 3 hours long. So that actually, somebody should do that.
I didn't want to see the rest of that because Thor wasn't looking like the Thor I knew.
I'm gonna assume at some point he gets himself together. But the first Thor, my sister's favorite thing to call, she will randomly call me one day and just say, "I need a horse," because Thor said that and he needed a horse, so he walked into a pet store and he just was like, "I need a horse." So
everyone really wasn't listening to what he said, but anyway, we're gonna come back
every time there's a thunderstorm. Elaine's like,
"Where's
Thor? Thor?"
You're listening to The Good Work Show.
To learn more about the show and how your company can tell their story, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Good Work Show.
Audience, welcome back to The Good Work Show. We are excited to be sitting here with Greg Pohl, who is the executive director of Emea's House. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Absolutely. So tell us all about Emea's House and your mission.
So Emea's House is a mission of the Episcopal Diocese of Atlanta. We've been on the south side and specifically in the Peoplestown neighborhood since 1967. So what's that, 53 years? And
your
our mission
is better than ours.
Yes,
we'll take your word for it.
Our mission is to improve the economic and social well-being of the residents of Peoplestown and surrounding neighborhoods in a nutshell. So we do education work with children and youth, mainly out of school time work. And social service work with adults, families.
So. Cool. Wow. So talk to us, tell us about Peoplestown for people who are geographically challenged, which I am one of them, who may be unfamiliar with the community and kind of the history of the community. Talk to us a little bit how the organization got started and what's so special about Peoplestown.
Okay. So first of all, Peoplestown is a neighborhood directly south of Georgia State Stadium, what used to be Turner Field. And we're so on the east side of the connector and down south, down towards the neighborhood of South Atlanta. So we border Grant Park, Summerhill to our north. And Peoplestown is a historic neighborhood. It's historically almost exclusively African American. High concentration of poverty, unfortunately, and really challenging outcomes in terms of education in the schools. And so a lot of work continues to need to be done there. We were founded actually by an Episcopal priest in 1967 who felt that the Episcopal diocese was not living into its stated values when it came to participating in the civil rights movement. And so he felt compelled to leave his suburban white parish and to move into Peoplestown, and bought a kind of falling down house there, fixed it up, and just started doing grassroots work and community organizing and after school programs and whatever that he felt that the community was indicating they needed. And so started doing a lot of advocacy work, marching on City Hall, on the State House, and really working on what we might today call systems level work. Mm-hmm. And he created, and I think this is really great what he called it, he created a center. He called it the Poverty Rights Office because he believed that even people who lived with the effects of poverty had rights, and that sometimes they just needed to have their voices amplified by somebody who did have the power to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, that's cool. So you definitely gave us a history of how the organization came to be, and I think that's really interesting and integral to the fabric of what you do every day. Talk to us about that, though. Talk to us about the everyday and what happens. So you've got a number of programs for youth and for adults, mm-hmm. and let's walk through them. So tell us about the CDF Freedom School. Let's start there and talk through what happens with that.
Yeah, that's one of our really exciting programs. It's actually a summer program. Children's Defense Fund mm-hmm. is created this program called Freedom Schools, modeled on Freedom Schools in Mississippi during the 60s. And it is a six-week program, literacy-based. The primary idea is to help kids, elementary age kids, not to experience summer reading loss, mm-hmm. so to avoid the summer slides, so-called. Mm-hmm. And we started doing it 5 years ago, so this will be our sixth year doing it. And we've had tremendous success with it. But it's not just about literacy. All of the books, all of the materials are culturally appropriate to the audience. Mm. And so, you know, the kids are reading books with African American characters in them. They're reading about African American history, and so as one of my friends says, it's a liberatory pedagogy, which is bigger words than I'm smart enough to really use. But there you have it.
Well, at least you said them correctly.
It's kind of rolled off my tongue.
I would have tripped all over that.
But it's really a good program, and it's a much needed program because in the elementary schools in that part of the city, only about 15% mm-hmm. of third graders can read on grade level.
Yep.
And we all know what that means in terms of graduation rates, in terms of incarceration rates. It's really sad.
Yep.
And so we felt that was one very tangible, specific thing that we could do in our community to make a difference in that.
Mm-hmm.
Third grade.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just keep telling people that over and over again, that third grade reading level is just so important. One thing and I know we've talked about this before, I think, with other guests on the show, but that summer slump, what is that, or slide, how much are kids losing in that time frame when they're out of school over the summer?
A lot of kids lose literally months worth of reading mm-hmm. ability. And so they get back to school in I guess, August, and they're already behind, mm-hmm. behind those who maybe had a different structure during the summer and different opportunities mm-hmm. where they either maintained or gained in reading. And we were really excited this past year so we do pre and post testing with a random, you know, sampling of our students. And we had 120 in the program. And we found that on average, the students gained about 1.9 years worth of reading ability during that 6 month period. So compare that to somebody who doesn't mm-hmm. have any opportunity, who loses months worth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you can see the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely important. So are you addressing the summer slide and just the basic, let me get you up to grade level in the first place? Because they're a large percentage of the students that you're serving aren't even at third grade. So not only are they sliding back over the summer, if they were there, they might be sliding back from a starting place of, you know, zero literacy.
That's right. So when I say they gained 1.9, that doesn't mean they went from third grade to, you know, fourth.
Right.
They just might be on par.
They may be on par, or they may still be behind, depending mm-hmm. on their starting point.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And so we understand at Emmaus House that the Freedom School program is not the total solution to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so we work in close partnership with our local elementary school, the Barack and Michelle Obama Academy,
mm-hmm.
To make sure that that they're doing the best that they can do, that we're doing the best we can. And they actually partner with us in that summer program. Mm-hmm. And we house it actually in their facility now. And so, you know, we're counting on them to do what they can do during the school year, and they're counting on us to do what we can during the summer.
Yeah.
It's a good partnership.
That's fantastic.
That is great. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about then the Youth on the Move program, because that's during the school year, but after school. So again, those off hours time. So what happens there?
The Youth on the Move is our after school program for middle and high school teenagers. And the goal of that program, if I boil it down, is for teenagers to graduate high school on time with a plan. Mm. And that plan might be a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Not everybody needs a plan to go to a four-year college.
Right.
Some of them will, but we want them to not just graduate and then be like, well, now what? Mm-hmm. And they end up going, you know, working at McDonald's or whatever with no real future. And so we're in our fourth year of that program now. And we actually, this past fall or past spring, were designated by the Department of Education as a 21st Century Community Learning Center. Okay. Which is very exciting for us, and I think in some ways a stamp of approval on what we're doing, and also thankfully comes with some funding as well.
Mm-hmm. Always important.
Always important. And so our goal is to have 40 teenagers average attendance each day. We're working towards that goal, but we do tutoring, we do a lot of enrichment type work, we do, you know, homework help, we do field trips. We do just a lot of things that enhance what's happening in the schools. So, you know, we don't see us as replacing what's happening there, but as enriching and enhancing what's happening there.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how many high schools do you have feeding into, or potential feeding into, that sort of 40 number that you're trying to get to every day?
So we're the middle school that we serve is Martin Luther King,
okay.
Which is in Summerhill.
Yep.
And then Manor Jackson, which is in East Atlanta, or Grant Park, on the border there. And then we have some from Carver, which is actually just down the street for us. But we're in the Jackson cluster, so we focus on King and Manor Jackson.
Fantastic, yeah. Yeah, all schools that we hear about a lot that need the support and the help of folks like you and at MAS House. So that's fantastic. We know you have some programs for adults, and we're going to come back after the break and talk about that. But before we do that, I think it'd be great to, at this point, talk to us a little bit in the next minute that we have left or so about the need that you have. Because you mentioned you've got culturally appropriate books, and of course they need to be on a variety of different reading levels. So I imagine, even though you have the designation of the 21st century learning program, is that you still have needs, and maybe even needs for volunteers. So talk to us a little bit about that as we wrap up talking about the youth programs, what those needs are to support that if you don't already have them baked in.
That's a great question, and I appreciate it. We do have, one of the things we really need is tutors for our after-school program. You know, we have a small staff, but we do rely on other people to come in. And so people who can come in and tutor for math, or sciences, or reading, who don't mind coming in, say, one day a week or you know, twice a month, whatever the case might be, but who can come in and offer some consistency to that. So not necessarily a one-time shot, but can be consistent. In the summer, one of the things that we're really needing right now are what we call servant leader interns, who are young people who are either in college or just graduated from college, who come and work with us on a paid basis for the summer to actually be hands-on in the classroom with our Freedom School kids.
Wow. Okay, great. Well, we'll definitely, through this vehicle of the show, hopefully we'll get that out there and get some volunteers for you. We're going to come back, audience, and take a break. We'll come back after the break and talk more with Greg Cole and get into some of the programs that Emmaus House offers for adults and for the entire family, because I think that's important that we're talking about youth, but then you're wrapping that into the entire family aspect. So we'll do that after the break. You are listening to The Good Work Show.
To learn more about the show and how your company can tell their story, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @Good Work Show.
audience, welcome back to the Good Work Show. We've been chatting with Greg Cole, who is the executive director of Emmaus House, an organization that is supporting community of Peoplestown. And if you know where Peoplestown is, nearing the south side of the city of Atlanta, near the Georgia State Stadium. Yes, I was getting ready to say arena, but I was like, it's not an arena, it's a stadium. Yes, it's a stadium, but definitely an area of need and high levels of need for children in terms of literacy. So they definitely are reading at an average below grade level. But then, you know, we talked about, Greg, that you have programs that are supporting the entire family. So not just youth, even though you have programs for the summer and during the school year for youth of all ages, you're really taking a family approach to supporting the people in the community. So tell us about some of the programs that you're offering for the adults in the family.
Sure. So our what used to be called the Poverty Rights Office is now called the Loki Center, which is named after a long-term volunteer and donor. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's where we do our, it's kind of a drop-in help center. And so people come, have a challenge, let's say, of almost any kind, and they come to us and we figure out whether we can help them directly or whether we refer them to a partner agency. And so we help people who need help with rental assistance, mm-hmm. or utilities, or to pay a copay on a prescription, people who are trying to navigate the Social Security disability system, which is very difficult for any of us. But right. If you don't have computer access or you're not computer literate, it's virtually impossible. And so we have staff who help people to do all that work. And we sign people up for earned benefits, for SNAP benefits. Mm-hmm. And so really helping people to access those opportunities that they're entitled to and that are available to them that just might need some help getting. So that's a piece of the work. We also have a food pantry, mm-hmm. with strong relationship with the Atlanta Community Food Bank. And so we do about 6,000 pounds of food a month distributed in the community. We also do have a case management program that we call Supports for Success. And the idea there is we want to help people who want to go through a workforce training program. Mm-hmm. We don't offer the training, but a lot of these programs are free, right. But it's not free to the person who wants to do it if they have to give up their job, mm-hmm. or if they need to get childcare. And so we want to provide those wraparound services that will help people to succeed so that then they can participate more meaningfully in the workforce.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So you should send them to Goodwill.
I know.
Yeah. We'll talk offline about that.
Yeah. So, but you also have, so those are programs where it kind of meets people like those immediate needs. Like, I need help today for these very immediate needs. But you also kind of have programs that provide folks kind of a pathway into improving their circumstance. So talk to us a little bit about the Fostering Family Leaders program and what that entails.
Fostering Family Leaders is actually a program that was designed by United Way. And the idea, as the name suggests, is to help people, mainly parents, to see themselves as leaders in their household, in their community, at work, mm-hmm. so that they're getting education in what that means to lead, to put it a different way, how to kind of take charge of their own destiny. Mm-hmm. And which is hard for people to do, yeah. a lot of times. And so, and we've run that, you know, we run it occasionally, not every semester or every, because it depends on the needs in the community, how many people are interested. But mm-hmm. the people who have taken it have really loved it, and they want to take it over and over again. And so trying to figure out what's the next step after mm-hmm. that has been a bit of a challenge. But it's important because, as you said, we want to help families, and that multi-generational approach, yeah. is really important. And we can help kids after school, but if they're going home to a less than healthy household, then, you know, we're not helping them to meet those challenges. So if we can help families to succeed, then in the long run, we'll be much more impactful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've been at this for 50 some odd years, or at least the organization has. Talk to us about some of those families. Give us sort of a picture, a face of who and in the makeup of the families that you're supporting every day. So can you share a success story or two?
Yeah, so there are families that I call legacy residents who have been there mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. generations, who own their own home, but are really struggling to get by. And particularly now with the forces of gentrification that are encroaching on the South Side, as they are in so many parts of the city, they're really being stressed and really finding it challenging, particularly older people who might be on a fixed income and yet their property taxes are going up, their other expenses are going up. And so we really are focused on helping those legacy residents to be able to stay in place. And there are one of the wonderful things about working in a place-based environment is that you get to really meet and get to know a lot of the residents. And one of the things that strikes me time and time again is the resilience of people, and people who are you know, facing pressures from all sides, who are faced with institutional racism, frankly, who deal with the effects of generational poverty, who, you know, that the odds, if you will, are stacked against them in so many ways. And yet I go to a meeting, community meeting, and listen to people talk, and I hear the as I said, the resilience in their voice. And I also hear other things, fear, concern, worry, anger, but it's that resilience that is so important. There's a man in our community who's really one of the leaders in the community who this year after year is standing up and fighting for what's best for the residents. And it's so impressive to see that kind of thing happening. One of the things I tell people is that we used to say that our job was to empower people in that part of the community. And I realized we don't empower anybody. People empower themselves. We can provide resources and some frameworks, but that empowerment comes from within the people who are there living it day after day.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. So summertime is coming up, and you've talked about a number of the resources that you have available. So talk to us a little about who is eligible to participate in the services, and then if there are some folks who are listening that are in those areas, and maybe they're interested in the summer program and that kind of stuff. What is the process for doing that or accessing any of your programs and services?
With Freedom School, the summer program, most of the participants actually come from the Obama Academy, which makes sense. It's in our neighborhood. We also have students from Dunbar Elementary, which is in Mechanicsville, just maybe a mile and a half away. So we're focused on people in that geographic region. Because we partner with the Obama Academy, we want most of the kids to be APS students, which makes sense. But there's an application form on our website under programs, and we have paper applications at our office. We usually have a waiting list, so we encourage people to apply, you know, as soon as they can. And the application forms are available now.
So how can folks find out all of the information? Is it on your website? Should they come to the office? And I guess, you know, that's one thing that we didn't talk about, because you mentioned place-based, which I think is when it comes to programs like you're offering, place-based makes a huge difference when you can walk into a place, when you can see people in the community and not just coming in and providing services or access to services, but you're actually there and part of the fabric of the community. So talk to us about how people get to those forms. How do they, you know, what happens when they walk in the door at Amaya's house?
Yeah. So on our social services at the Loki Center, we're open every day from 9:30 to 3. And we have somebody at the desk who will receive you when you come in and will, you know, point you in the right direction. And it's really important to us that, and this is a phrase that I use over and over again, that we respect the dignity of the people that we work with. So if you come into our space, we want you to feel respected and heard and cared for. So if people are interested in those social service type things, then dropping into the Loki Center at any time is the easiest way to do that. In our main office, our office manager is there all day. She can... Somebody comes in, she can give them applications for Freedom School, applications for Youth on the Move, the after-school program. And after school, people can just show up then, too, for after-school program and then get registered and so on. And that is from about 4 to 7 every day, 5 days a week. So I agree with you. It's great to be part of the fabric of the neighborhood. Yeah. And when people come onto our, and like I said, into our space, we want them to feel valued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds definitely like you're providing that, and your team is providing that. In terms of folks who want to volunteer, I know we mentioned at the end of the last segment that you always need tutors and a variety of different subjects. But if people have items or other resources or transportation resources or connections, or they just want to support with financial gifts, which is always super important for nonprofits, tell us how the listeners can get in touch with you for that.
One thing that is the easiest thing to do is just go to emmaushouse.com. Mm-hmm. And our contacts are in there, our email addresses. People are certainly more than welcome to email me directly. And I'm just at gregcole@emmaushouse.org. Would be happy to hear from any of your listeners if they want to get more engaged or just to learn more information.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Greg, we appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much to you and your team who are doing some fantastic work in an area of need and supporting that community. We wish you the best of luck and many more years.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
You are listening to The Good Work Show.
To learn more about the show and how your company can tell their story, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Good Work Show.
Well, that was a great interview. Welcome back to the Good Work Show, everybody.
Yeah, so I'm glad that we had Greg in here a couple of weeks ago to talk about the great work that they're doing over at Emmaus House.
Check out their website. Make sure you give, donate, volunteer.
Yeah, so there's plenty of opportunities for all of those things that are happening there. If you live within the zip codes and the areas that they service, there's tons of resources available. Stuff for kids going into school and
adults and families. That's the nice thing is that they're serving the whole family. So not just one piece of it, but, you know, services for everybody in that community. And they're there. So you can walk up and go right in
and see the people. And they're the same people that are there every day. Mm-hmm. So they're always going to be there to help you. So, great stuff that we had there happening.
Tell them about the hand sanitizer thing we just found out.
It expires.
Yes. If you have an expiration date on there, because the alcohol might
evaporate. Alcohol evaporates out of it. So you know
I wonder if you can put some more alcohol in it.
If you can find alcohol, I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, can you add?
Well, the whole thing about
aloe vera oil.
And
I don't even have that anymore. Can't even find that.
I actually saw some of that today. Really? Do we need some?
I feel like somebody said that they were getting low on that too.
Well, I don't know if it was pure aloe vera, but it was the burn gel, so it probably was. I mean, I can go get some if I need.
It was
to.
The burn. How much was it? It wasn't like know. The big like.
No, it was like big. It was like this, like the individual burn gels. Hmm. It was the same place that I found alcohol, so I'm not well.
Don't
I
tell, tell anybody. You, don't
well,
tell.
Well, I bought it all, so there's.
I feel like the other thing that might work. Is fingernail polish. You just get in a pinch.
Remover.
Yes. Acetone.
Yeah. No,
I feel like acetone.
You said fingernail polish. I'm like,
remover. Yes. Yeah. I meant the remover. But yeah, you get some acetone. Hey.
It takes everything else off.
I'm pretty sure it will kill whatever.
It may not be the safest thing, but it will probably in a pinch.
It's flammable. You don't want to, you don't really want to put your hands on
stuff. I did that once when I was many years ago.
Set your nail on fire?
I did. I was trying to light a candle.
I've never heard of this.
And I had acrylic nails and I don't know. It just lit up. It was like a candle. I could hold my thumb up. It was like, it was on fire. It was,
That's probably how they do that on the magic shows.
Probably. They probably just put alcohol on your finger as long as you,
it burns off.
But yeah,
you should try that.
I'm going to not. I'll pass.
You were close.
Well, I've done it before, so I don't ever need to do that again in my life. Set anything on my body on fire. Like, that's
no,
not
think,
something I
don't I think
need.
I've ever set anything on my body on fire, but I have super glued my eye shut. For yeah. Now, this was a freak accident, but I was trying to super glue something, and you know how... Yeah. Every time you use super glue, you have to recut the thing open.
And they
because
tell
it's
you.
Yes. So anyway, I was trying to do it and I was squeezing the thing and it squirted up.
Oh my gosh.
And it went in my eye. And luckily I closed right before it had got to the eyeball part, because it was just my eye. I thought I was dead. I was like, Mom, I was like, oh my God. I thought I was literally dead. I didn't know what to do. And so,
what did you do?
It was in my eyelashes. So she was able to get him apart.
Wow.
But I thought I was dead. I thought I was a goner.
That is crucial. I mean, I've glued my fingers together.
No, it was
and I just pulled them
glue
apart
in the eye.
I'm trying to think if I had any sort of miss. Oh, I burned. I probably had like a second or third degree burn. It was bad. It was 4th of July and we had sparklers at my grandmother's house. Yeah. And we just threw them down on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And I went to pick them up and I picked up the lit end versus. So like I had a sparkler shaped ridge burned into the palm of my hand for a while. That wasn't fun.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, but I've never glued that. Though that reminds me of the episode of Designing Women where
somebody glued their eye shut.
Suzanne glued her mouth shut. She was trying to glue a fingernail back on.
Uh huh.
And she did something, and then all of a sudden she
couldn't talk.
She had glued her mouth shut, and as much as she talked on the show, that was the running gag of the episode that she
couldn't talk.
And something happened that she normally would have been like.
Uh-huh.
Like crazy about it. And she was like, yeah, it was kind of funny.
That's funny. Yeah, but whatever you do, don't look at the thing while you're trying to. I don't know why.
How hard were you squeezing?
I must have been a lot.
That's
I don't
horrifying.
Know. It was. I literally thought I was dead. I was like, I mean, what else?
Because that's the natural progression.
Yes, it's like super glue in your eye. Well, you just might as well.
I'm just done.
Yes.
She
was here, then she wasn't.
Super glue took you out.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, check your expiration dates. Don't look at your super glue.
And
don't pick up the wrong end of the sprinkler, of the
fingernail polish remover in the event. There's probably not a run on fingernail polish remover right
probably
now.
Probably not.
Yeah. You could probably get it.
I don't think
rubbing it on your hands though.
It's probably
gonna dry them out like super
fast. It will
because
it's like when you get your nails done and you're like, why are my hands completely?
But they'll be
clean.
They won't have germs.
Or you can use soap and water.
Well, sure.
There's always the standby.
Yes.
Of good old fashioned.
Is there still soap?
I hope so. Is there no soap?
I don't know. I have a back stock of soap at my house. So
I mean,
I had to get soap.
I did see something else funny online. They were like, I don't understand people having to run out and buy soap. And I'm like, what? I was like, that is a question.
Yeah.
Like, why people all of a sudden had to run out and buy, like, soap lasts for a while. Like,
it doesn't last in my house, bro. But I buy, like, 18 bottles at a time.
Like a cake. I mean, even if you just had like a cake, I don't like bars of soap. They creep me out. But a bar of soap lasts for a while.
Yeah. Well, like maybe like a.
Or like even a bottle
like a
of
weeks.
Body wash or like hand soap. It lasts. Like it's
hand
not,
soap don't last that long. I'm telling you, it doesn't. Put some water in it. No, that's the worst.
Now I feel like that. I need to go buy more. I'm like, I have hand soap at the.
I'm gonna buy some
I got
more
hand
soap
and I have dish soap. I don't know that I need more soap, but
you just never know.
Not,
I feel like that's
thing?
The next
like I
thing.
Need to go buy more soap. Well, you can't wash your hands if you don't have the soap. You have to have soap and water. The soap breaks down the virus, so you have to have the soap. But I just never really can. I use shampoo.
You can use shampoo.
Okay, I have that too. I just don't know, you know.
I mean, I'm saying that like I'm the authority.
It's got
some shampoo and fingernail polish remover together.
Just mix it all.
Just mix it
up.
Like that's the new hand sanitizer.
Right total there. Chemistry project for keeping yourself
clean. That's what
clean.
They should do. That's what kids should do right now. You should invent the next.
So they're
hand sanitizer. Like what's next after hand sanitizer? What's next after wipes? There's got to be something else.
I saw this thing, though, where they were like, these kids created, and it was like they were really bragging about it. They were like, these kids created a robot to dispense hand sanitizer. And I'm like, that exists.
Yeah.
Like, why do we need that? Like, I understand that they're kids.
I mean, it's just easier just to pump it, right?
I'm like, I understand they're kids and this is cute, but can they be focused on something else? Because we've already done this.
Yeah.
Like, every store that you walk in, there's a little thing that you can put your hand under and get. Yeah, I was like, that seems like we just.
Well, did the robot follow you? Maybe it follows you.
I don't know. I didn't even click the link because I was like, this is dumb. I'm like,
I'm like shattering the kids' robotic dreams.
Like, the kids didn't create. I'm like, they didn't invent this.
I feel like it had to be a robot that followed you around, and then anytime you needed it, you just
maybe
put your hand out.
Because they were like, kids invent a robotic hand sanitizer dispenser, and I'm like, congratulations, you did something that's existed for 10 years. Okay, great.
It had to be on wheels.
Let's hope there was something. You. I need to go find the link, and I will apologize to the children in advance if they had done something innovative with this robot. But
well, have you ever built a robot?
No.
Okay, then. Well, see, that's impressive.
But that's like me saying, like, oh, I'm going to create, you know, automatic, what's the thing? Water faucet. Like, I'm going to create a robot that turns the water on. And you're like, well, that exists. Why would I create a robot? Why would I create a robot to turn on the water? I don't know. Touchless. So that's my point.
Maybe like, it sounds like the teacher gave them that assignment.
It does. And I'm like, why is this viral? I don't understand.
Was it viral or just did it come up on your feed?
I mean, but I can't imagine why. It was nothing that I don't know. I don't know how it would have.
Somebody's parent posted that, and now you're.
I know, you're right?
Sorry.
And I'm sure you're very proud of your kids. I just don't understand.
Unfriend, unfollow.
I just don't understand the idea of inventing something that already exists. It's like
maybe they use the wrong terminology.
I think so.
It wasn't invent.
Maybe they created. I would support them saying created, but the whole idea that they invented was like, no, you didn't. That's like when people say like, this is literally the hardest thing, or like, this will literally take 1 million years. No, it figuratively will take 1 million years. It literally will not take 1 million years. It's a pet peeve. I like using the right word for the right thing.
Well,
invent was not it.
No, that probably wasn't it, but well, it, maybe they invented the type of robot that it was. Like maybe
I'm
they,
sure,
they,
maybe
they,
this particular this, robot this, never existed before.
I'm sure.
But anyway.
There's something to it.
So there's that. Look it up. Maybe the kids did something spectacular and I might have missed it. And as I agree, I don't think that they had done anything. But
well,
anyway.
I'm going to get some fingernail polish remover right after this.
You know where I should... I just thought about
it.
A place...
Just to have it. I mean, it costs like $1.
I know. I just thought about a place I'd need to go on the way home, but I don't want to say it until after I go because I don't want to like... No, not Costco. Like, go there and then...
Home Depot?
No.
Lowe's? Mm-mm. What do they have in it? What do they
have
at
the
place?
Well, I'm going to go get some soap, but I just want to go to this place before. No, so that's exactly. So it's not any place that anybody's thinking. So
I know. Bath and Body Works? I mean.
I like to go to the places before I.
I have a run on Bath and Body. Like,
I need to go.
When it's like, I just get 30 bottles at a time.
I don't like the way that those things smell anymore.
Oh, I do. I like them.
I don't like them. I have some at home, but I don't. Love it, but I think I'll be stopping by there on my way home to see if I can get some more.
Well, I already saw somebody post something. He was
Is it
like,
empty?
No, I don't know. He posted, he was like, I'm not going around smelling like warm vanilla sugar all day because y'all bought up all the Purell.
It
was a guy. He's like, I can't go around smelling like this.
Well, you know, you catch more.
But that was funny. I thought that was funny because you know he got that from Bath & Body Works.
Yes, absolutely, because where else will you get that? Well, anyway, we'll wash your hands, everybody.
Yes.
And we'll
stay
see
safe. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
To learn more about the show and how your company can tell their story, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @GoodWorkShow.